hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjavihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjavihari. जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजक आचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद इस डिवाइन ग्रेस इसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग। नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम Canto 6, Chapter 7, Indra Offends Brihaspati, Text 22. Tasyayam anayasya syat. Tasyayam anayasya. Gosh. Anayasya asit. तस्यायम् अनयस्यासीत् परेभ्यो वह पराभवः प्रक्षिणेभ्यस्व वैरिभ्यः समृद्धानां च यत्सुराः। तस्यायम् अनयस्यासीत् परेभ्यो वह पराभवः प्रक्षिणेभ्यस्व वैरिभ्यः समृद्धानं च यत्सुराः। तस्यायम् अनयस्यासीत् परेभ्यो वह पराभवः प्रक्षीणेभ्यस्व वैरिभ्यः समृद्धानं च यत्सुराः। It is. Tasya, that, I am, this, anayasya, of your ungrateful activity, asit, was, parebhyaha, by others, vaha, of all of you, parabhavaha, the defeat, Prakshinebhyaha, although they were weak. Savairibhyaha, by your own enemies, who were previously defeated by you. Samruddhanam, being yourselves very opulent. Cha, and, yet, which. Suraha, O demigods. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. We'll do two verses today, 22 and 23. Translation. Because of your misbehavior towards Brihaspati, you have been defeated by demons. My dear demigods, since the demons were weak, having been defeated by you several times, how else could you, who were so advanced in opulence, be defeated by them? Purport. The Devas are celebrated for fighting with the Asuras perpetually. In such fights, the Asuras were always defeated, but this time the demigods were defeated. Why? The reason, as stated here, was that they had offended their spiritual master. Their impudent disrespect of their spiritual master was the cause of their defeat by the demons. As stated in the Shastras, when one disrespects a respectable superior, one loses his longevity and the results of his pious activities, and in this way, one is degraded. Text 23. Magavan dvishatapasya prakshinan gurvati kramat samprati upachitan bhuyaha kavyam aradhya bhaktitaha adadiran nilayanam mamapi bhrugudevataha. O Indra, your enemies, the demons, were extremely weak because of their disrespect towards Shukracharya. But since they have now worshipped Shukracharya with great devotion, they have again become powerful. By their devotion to Shukracharya, they have increased their strength so much that now they are even able to easily seize my abode from me. Purport. Lord Brahma wanted to point out to the demigods that by the strength of the Guru, one can become most powerful within this world. And by the displeasure of the Guru, one can lose everything. This is confirmed by the song of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasya prasadan nagati kutopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one is benedicted by the mercy of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. Although the demons are insignificant in comparison to Lord Brahma, because of the strength of their guru, they were so powerful that they could even seize Brahmaloka from Lord Brahma. We therefore pray to the spiritual master, Mukam karoti vachalam pungum langhayate girim yat kripa tamaham vande shri gurum dinataranam. By the mercy of the guru, even a dumb man can become the greatest orator, and even a lame man can cross mountains. As advised by Lord Brahma, one should remember this Shastric injunction if one desires success in his life. Om Ajnana Timirandasya ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। इट्स अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग सब्जेक्ट मैटर। इनफैक्ट anytime there's a guru disciple relationship discussion, it somehow energizes the person and it energizes the discussion, because it's a very while energizing, it's also a very difficult topic. And here a very simple principle is being spoken about. This is being spoken by Lord Brahma, who's giving advice to Lord Indra and all the demigods. Can you sit somewhere where I can see you? Or you can be seen, however. Lord Brahma said something very simple. That as the demigods, your power to conquer over the demons and keep your heavenly abode with you is because of the mercy of the spiritual master. And even if you are very powerful, you can manage the entire universe's affairs very nicely by offending the spiritual master even a little bit, then all your strength has gone away. So much so that the demons can now easily defeat you, when previously you were able to conquer over them very easily. So this principle that's being spoken here, as stated in the Shastras, when one disrespects a respectable superior, and now Prabhupada's generalizing it, he's not just talking about a spiritual master or the spiritual master, he's talking about a respectable superior. One loses his longevity and the results of his pious activities, and in this way one is degraded. So, directly speaking, here the context is that there are the demons who are the enemies of the demigods, and because Indra had disrespected Brihaspati, they charged at the demigods and they conquered the heavens. Now, on a day-to-day basis, we may not have enemies on the outside, but every moment we have enemies inside. In fact, we don't even know who's our friend and who's our enemy. Prior to coming to meeting with the spiritual master or the devotees of Krishna, we actually took all the enemies of our heart to be our dear friends. Because those, we didn't even know how to recognize who's a friend and who's an enemy. In fact, we accepted all the qualities that allowed us sense gratification as our very dear friends. And all the good advice that was given by superiors, whether they are parents or the village elders, there are no villages, but you get the idea, or anyone who comes our way and gives us good advice, we took them as enemies. So anything that allows unrestricted enjoyment
or anyone that did that, we accepted as friends. And anyone who curbed it for our own benefit, we disliked. It's like, who's this guy? Who are these people? Who are they to tell me how I should live my life or not live my life? Why do I care? Etc. From such a condition, by the mercy of the devotees, we change our perspective of who's a friend and who's an enemy. And once we accept that those urges, especially the six buddies, lust, greed, envy, pride, madness, illusion, and all their cousins and relatives, the whole big family, we'd recognize that, oh, they are the actual enemies. And the protective words or instructions, or the presence of the spiritual master in my life is the actual friend. Suhrudam sarvadehinam. That the sadhu is the friend of all living entities. And the friendship is that they give us for free, without our asking even, a warning, advice, a friendly advice, if you will, that we are heading towards the cliff. And so, by their mercy, somehow, something, some light is turned on. Therefore we say, Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. This Chakshur Unmilita is, they open our eyes to the visual that we are heading towards the cliff. The cliff is that perpetual existence within the material world in some degraded species of life. Imagine being a crocodile or an alligator. It's no fun to always walk on the fours like this, crawling. And, you know, such a thick tail that all we can do is, you know, it's not like we're even good looking. Of course, for the she-alligator, definitely very attractive. But, you know, generally it's gross. And where does the crocodile or alligator live? In the marsh, you know. In the Everglades in Florida. Well, we can say it's nice weather there. But what are we, you know, it's just the lifestyle. Or a bug, something. Fruit fly. I mean, of course we can say it's on a healthy diet, only eats fruits. But it's a nuisance, no? Fruit fly is a nuisance. So, from such a possible existence, we've got the human form of life, and someone is helping us make good use of it. And we don't know how to use it. So then their instructions, their presence makes life worthwhile. Speaking from a Vedic perspective or a spiritual perspective, those who don't have a spiritual alternative in life, all this we're speaking or we're reading makes no sense. So their instructions elevate our consciousness. And the more we align our lives, our body, words and thoughts towards those instructions, our consciousness gets elevated into higher and higher levels of existence, of knowledge, of happiness, of insight, of ability to understand truth, all of that. And by the same body, words and mind, when we dent that relationship, even if there's a little scratch, then it has its effects. Even a little brings our consciousness down. Even a little, what we say, offense or mistake or negligence or callousness in the instructions of the spiritual master wreaks havoc. What to speak of directly offending or rejecting the instructions of the guru? This is why the personality is called guru. Guru means heavy. Prabhupada would say heavy doesn't mean physically heavy, you know, like a big fat guy. Guru means heavy with realizations and heavy with instructions. And also that what they say carries a lot of weight. As they say in English, right? My words don't seem to carry any weight. So carrying weight because it is very important message that we receive from the Guru. And when it's taken lightly, pun intended, when they're taken lightly, they don't touch the heart. So the Guru can be offended. Well, the Guru does not get offended per se, but we can offend the Guru through our body. Our body would mean that we do not offer proper respect or obeisances, or we do not engage this body in the service of the spiritual master or the Vaishnavas. Or in our mind, we have thoughts that are not too healthy about the spiritual master. Or somewhere we get an idea that with a little study or realization or some service, we get some insights about a particular verse that even our spiritual master may not say, and we think, whoa. He didn't, especially if you're in an environment where, let's say, they're answering a question, and we think, I would have answered that question very differently. Because, you know, in this verse, it says like this, and this would really be the right answer. I don't know why they're speaking like that. How come Krishna's inspiring me with the right answers? I would have answered it totally differently. You know, I would have said like, whatever, you know, the craziness that comes into our mind. Or by our words. By our words, we say things that are not honoring and respectful. Or whether we don't say respectful words, or we directly say disrespectful things. I'm sure each one of us has our long list of examples of such experiences. I'll cite two, one personal and one that I was part of. When one of the spiritual masters had visited Chicago, he was at a little gathering. Other devotees were also there. And the spiritual master is a very, you know, generally known as a very gentle person. And so they were just seated in the Vyasasana, and they were looking around the room, just, you know, looking around, glancing, I guess, sharing mercy just by their glance. So one of the devotees, who was disciples of that spiritual master, became uncomfortable with the awkward silence. Ever been in a room with the guru where there is silence and we don't know how to deal with it? Ever experience like that? Yeah. Oh, just doesn't guru, senior devotee, they're just quiet. They look like that and we don't know what. We have this urge to say something, you know, we have to say something. We can't deal with the silence. So this person waited about 30 seconds, that's the max that they could tolerate silence, and said, Maharaj, sing this song. Some particular song. No, yeah, this is, that happened. And half the room went, ah! And the other half went, yeah, nice song. You know, ordering the spiritual master what to do. Sing the song. So he said, how about the other song? No, sing this song. And interestingly enough, to make it worse, the spiritual master actually sang that song. So for a person who doesn't understand, they're thinking, wow, he's listening to my... They were thinking they were making a request. Said, he's listening to me. And from Krishna's perspective, it's like a heavy lesson, you know. Suppose we order the spiritual master, knowingly or unknowingly. Correct? And if the spiritual master says, who are you, a fruit fly? Get out of here. Punar mushika bhava. Then at least we come to our senses, correct? I must have said something wrong. Please forgive me. We offer our dandavats. But if he follows the order, that's even worse. Then we are, it's a lesson in being oblivious to the fact of the offense. So he naturally sang the song. Another instance was, there was a program and my spiritual master was speaking with somebody. And the program was supposed to happen in the basement. All the devotees had gathered. And somehow my spiritual master understood that the program must be upstairs. So I guess he was waiting for others. And some people had gathered and he was speaking to someone, one Mataji. Other devotees were sitting there. The rest were in the basement. And the kirtan had just started. And so one of the devotees told me, please ask Maharaj to come down. So in my super enthusiasm, I ran up the stairs and he was speaking with someone and I paid about half an obeisance because I had this sense of urgency that the program has started, you know, it should happen on time because he's very particular about time. So I paid half an obeisance, so maybe it was full obeisance, I can't remember. And I said, Maharaj, the program is downstairs or something like that. And he looked at me, he looked at this Mataji he was talking to. He looked at me again and said, at least she speaks nicely to me. And that was it. For me, the whole world stopped for a moment. My ears became just deadly silent. I couldn't hear anything around me. My knees were shivering. I didn't know what was happening. You know? And like a fool, instead of saying, I'm sorry, I kind of walked down quietly. Because I didn't know what hit me. Because I've never seen my spiritual master be heavy like that. I mean, that too, he also said it in a very gentle way, but it carried so much weight. Like, wow. At least she speaks nicely to me or something. And, you know, I had to come back to write a whole big letter of apology to put myself back on track. So by words, and it was not like I had intended, I was carrying this sense of urgency that somehow, you know, it happened. That I lost track of proper respect in that 2 seconds of time. And in those 2 seconds of time, you know, a thunderbolt, lightning struck me. Even recently, I think, happened. We were in a discussion. It was a heavy argument. There was some argument happening, some discussion. And I was making a point. And my spiritual master turned to me and said something else, totally different from what I said. And it came out of my mouth without my... Usually I'm not like that, but I said, why not? If it had been, why not Guru Maharaj or something? Why not? You know, it's like I'm arguing with a buddy or someone. Why not? And he didn't budge or, you know, twitch or anything. He just went on with the conversation. I walked out of the room thinking, whoa, what happened? And my wife looked at me and said, which world were you in? What happened? I said, no, I didn't intend it, but it came out. And when I went home and started analyzing, it came out because in that whole conversation, somewhere I had a predetermined idea that I have to say something and what I'm about to say is right, you know. And I was trying to convince my spiritual master about how I was right. And as we heard recently, even if we are right, if you're with a sadhu and we don't behave properly, we're wrong automatically. We may be right about the point, but we are totally wrong about the interaction. The whole thing gets messed up, even if you're right. We may be right, which is rare, but we may be right. Even then, we're wrong. So then I had to again write another. I have many stories of many letters of apology in the process of interacting with my spiritual master and other devotees. Many letters. Even a moment that it completely masks our vision of anything. In this case, it's very serious stuff. Neglect of the... This was a corporal offense to the spiritual master that he did not express. Now, when there is a corporal offense, many times there is something inside that is happening. And yesterday we heard from Chandramouli Maharaj very nicely. That's the pride that puts out a certain type of behavior. Pride or arrogance or some idea of my achievement so far. It puts out a certain kind of body language with others. And in this case, Sriman Indra, who is very mercifully taking the role of teaching us how not to be, this is very dangerous, offending the spiritual master. So when such things happen, then the demons inside, they take over. When we follow the instruction of the spiritual master enthusiastically, we're able to conquer those demons. Lust, greed, envy, pride, madness, illusion, etc. We're able to discern and say, no, no, I should be humble. Yes, whatever is the situation. In this case, humility is the more powerful way to go. I'll take the higher road, etc. And if that sense of submission is not very strong, or a little weak, or slackening, to that degree, the enemy will attack. And they will even take over. So recently I was explaining to someone, or sharing, that this Native American story, that there was a grandfather who was talking to his grandson, and he was explaining that within each of us there are two wolves. There is a black wolf and a white wolf. And the black wolf represents greed, lust, anger, violence, etc. Insult to others, disrespect. And the white wolf represents forgiveness, tolerance, mercy, kindness, etc. And he said that these two wolves are always fighting. So the grandchild naturally asked, so who wins? And the grandfather said, whichever one you feed. Now, how do we choose which one to feed? It depends upon whether we are being guided by the spiritual master's instructions. When I say spiritual master's instruction, it means Shastra also, because spiritual master doesn't speak anything outside of Shastra. When we feed the white wolf with the spiritual master's instruction, then we are able to curb all the urges or the attacks of the black wolf. But negligence, disrespect, or downright disobedience of the instructions, then we are feeding the black wolf. We feel like it's not so bad after all. Sometimes a mix of both is good. It's healthy. Like that. Now, as a practicing devotee or devotees, when we find that we find ourselves in spaces where either in our mind or by our words or our physical behavior, we have offended someone superior. For that matter, we should not offend anyone, superior or not. In fact, we should not offend even the non-devotees. Because there is Jana Aparad, one of the things that Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about, that in the list of offenses, offending the general public is also listed. It doesn't mean we don't speak the truth. We should speak the truth and straight up, but not in an offensive manner. No, we can't offend even the general living entity. When there is disrespect, then we find ourselves in space and we think, how do I correct this situation? The symptom may be here, But like, unlike the modern medicine where they try to patch and help or cure, I shouldn't say cure, they relieve the symptoms here. For example, if someone has a headache, then they will say, take a Tylenol and, you know, headache will go away. But those who are into holistic medicine will try to figure out why the headache is coming in the first place. Sometimes it may be because of indigestion. So if they solve digestion problem, headache goes away. So the medicine is not for the head, it's for the stomach. But those who don't know medicine, they'll keep curing or relieving the headache. Similarly, the holistic cure is any wrong or anything that needs to be adjusted, any symptoms that we find in our spiritual life, the cure is in the relationship with the spiritual master and Krishna, the devotees. If we adjust that, if we work on that, all the symptoms will go away. And I want to pause there and see if there are any questions or discussion. Then the Mukham Karoti Vachalam. The instructions of the spiritual master are so potent that is described that the impossible becomes possible. And without following the instructions of the spiritual master, even the possible becomes impossible. Something that's easy to do, it becomes impossible in the sense that although we may be able to accomplish the particular activity, sometimes you can't even accomplish the simplest of things. But if we do, we do it with so much pride and need for attention and all of that, that nothing is accomplished actually. We get wrong results. We get anti-results from doing something nice. You understand? For example, if we did some service to someone, but if we did it with pride or with a need for acknowledgement, then we haven't gotten the fruit of that service. There is some benefit, but not the fruit of the service. The fruit of the service is attraction to hearing about Krishna. Shushusho Shradadanasya Vasudeva Katha Ruchi Syan Mahatsevaya Vipra Punya Tirtha Nishevanath. So the fruit is attraction to hearing about Krishna. Fruit is attraction to Krishna's holy name. We don't get that fruit. So even the possible becomes impossible. And for us, this we may not be mukam, dumb. We can speak fancy words. We may have gone to college. We may have had degrees or training in certain fancy ways of speaking. We may not be dumb in that sense. We're dumb from a spiritual perspective. We don't know what to say. When a senior devotee comes, we don't even know what to say. We mumble something. And we try to say something that seems respectful, but actually is very disrespectful. Maharaj, sing the song. Or something like that. So we're dumb in that sense. And karoti vachalam, one becomes such an eloquent speaker of truth. Or he says, pangu, langhayate girim. Pangu means one who is crippled. Such a person can jump over, cross over mountains. For us, the impossible thing is to come out of the ocean of material existence. That anyone, however big, small, educated, not educated, good looking, not good looking, physically powerful, not powerful, cannot come out of the ocean of material existence. And when we say ocean of material existence, let's not get the picture that we are somewhere riding on the waves and, you know, we're deep in the ocean. We're not even in the surface where someone can see us. Because those who are on the surface can be rescued. Correct? Because they can be seen. But I can't say we, but I, deep down in the ocean where it is so dark. And I have these heavy dead weights around my feet that I'm stuck in the bed of the ocean. From there, one is being rescued. Someone is coming searching into the depths of the ocean to rescue us. And it becomes possible to come out of the ocean of material existence, which otherwise no one even knew that we existed. Even in our own families, you know, people didn't know we existed. That's why no one calls us, right? We don't hear from family members, far distant cousins. When they see us, they say, hey, hi, nice to see you. Otherwise, they don't call us. They don't even know we exist. We don't call anyone. We don't know others exist. We're so busy in our own world. From there, the spiritual master rescues a person, gives them proper knowledge about Krishna, establishes a relationship, and gives the whole hope and opportunity to relieve oneself from this ocean. That is Sri Guru Dina Taranam. Dina means very, very unfortunate, fallen. Taranam is to cross over, to relieve. Anyway, Himanshu, you had a question.
Two questions, actually. Thank you for your class.
Okay.
My first question is, in terms of you described the importance of having a proper etiquette in terms of speaking with the spiritual master. I'm wondering, does that more apply after you've accepted the person as your spiritual master? Because I'm thinking before you accept the spiritual master, you may have certain doubts, you know, conflicts in the mind, and it might do you well to express them very honestly, of course not disrespectfully,
but
very honestly, like, this is what I'm struggling with. Whereas once you've accepted the spiritual master, that, of course, because of the awe and reverence, you might not be so straightforward. So could you speak a little bit about that now? Second question also.
Generally, it's better to be quiet. Someone had told us, we have one mouth and two ears. It's so that we can hear more than we can speak. But in actual behavior, we have 20 mouths and about quarter of a ear. Because hearing is not so thorough. So when we hear something, of course, even after accepting a spiritual master, actually it should be the other way around. Even after the spiritual master has accepted us, expressing a doubt is no problem. There's nothing wrong. As long as it is done with the proper consciousness. A doubt has different facets. One facet is, I just didn't understand. Like the spiritual master said something and I just didn't understand. Happens. I got an email. Not that I'm the right example, but I'm the right example for one who doesn't understand. Okay. I got an email once from my spiritual master that said, such and such person is friends of this Prabhu's mother. Okay. And I saw it and I said, oh, okay. Maharaj is just giving me some bit of information. About 2 months later, he said, did you know, do you remember I'd sent you that email about such and such person is this Prabhu's mother? I said, yeah, I got. And he said, and you didn't know what it meant, did you? Because I hadn't done anything about it. And I said, no. He said, I had hoped that you would read into it and understand that perhaps there's a match within this boy and that woman's daughter. It's like, wow, where is the connection for the two? I didn't even know that that's what he was conveying. He wanted me to read into the message, and it was only one line. This Mataji is that Prabhu's mother's friend. And I was supposed to know, and somewhere apparently that there she has a daughter and there can be an alliance. Nothing occurred to me. And for him it was like, so you were not thinking about it. So doubt means one, I didn't even understand. So please explain again. That's a doubt. Second, a doubt is because I have attachments, only part of the information is filtering in. Like Arjuna in the beginning, Krishna said so many times, and he says, what? Are you saying fight or not fight? First you say fight, then you say use intelligence. Now you're saying fight again. What's going on? So that's another reason why doubts arise. Third reason is, I mean, when we say there are attachments, those are the demons that Arjuna asks Krishna to kill. Keshava, please kill this. Then another doubt is something that I hear seems to conflict with something I've already heard or understood. So I want reconciliation. Another doubt is, I think I know something well, and what you're saying isn't matching that. That one is dangerous, guy. And sometimes we ask that in a nice, politically correct way. We say, I'm seeking clarification. It's actually our conviction is correct. I'm right. That's a tricky one. So doubts have many facets. We should know which doubt it is and how to address those doubts. So it's sometimes, you know, because we're conditioned, we do feel convinced that our vision is right. We've seen something that makes sense to us. And in fact, the funny part is, it does make sense to us. Because we are from here and we're looking at the world, and the spiritual master is there, is looking at the world. It's not the same picture anyway. Always a different picture. So when such doubts come, there are ways of expressing it. That I have a problem, that I'm feeling that I'm right, and I want to go beyond this issue. I would like to know how to see it differently. Please help me. That's okay. Then there is scope for help because of humility. So in general, respect is the fabric of any relationship, whether superior, peer, junior, animal, tree, plant, doesn't matter. So asking for doubts, expressing is okay. The only thing in the spiritual master-disciple relationship is that a kind of familiarity cannot come. That may be with the superior, another superior. We may have a little familiarity, a little more friendship. But even then we should be careful. Because as soon as there is familiarity, there is contempt. It will come. First it comes with a very casual comment, then something more casual, then something and something. It keeps becoming so casual that disrespect sets in and we don't even know. However, to answer your question, we can always express doubt, but done carefully, humbly. Pranipat Pariprashna. Yeah, there's always room. I was told right in the beginning that the spiritual master-disciple relationship is one of conversation. There can always be a conversation. It's not like as soon as you hear something, yes, sir. I mean, some things are like that. But... Is that okay? Another one?
Something I've been thinking about lately. Is the relationship with the spiritual master one that's based on a sense of commitment in the beginning? Or is it based more on you hear from the person and hearing from them gives you the conviction that, you know, this particular vani can guide me out of the material world? Or does it begin rather more with like a sense of relationship? Because you hear that sometimes devotees, they develop a relationship with someone and it's more that personal connection that is fueling their... And with others, it's just through the hearing process. So I'm just wondering if you could clarify, like, which way is it supposed to be? Or
commitment never comes overnight. There's no relationship that we commit to overnight. And if you do, then we should be careful. Something's wrong in that. We as conditioned souls, we come from an environment of doubt, an environment of previous betrayals, previous disappointments, etc. And when we meet a bona fide spiritual master or the devotees who want to guide us, we examine them from the same experiences, or we call that biases. So Prabhupada said one should examine for a period of time, ask questions, see what they get, how it helps them. And the spiritual master also gets to test the disciple. We should know that even after becoming disciple, you are always tested by the guru. He never says, today is a pop quiz. Nothing like that. Just by simple interactions, our consciousness is tested. And they get a sense. That is why it is said in general in front of the guru, better to shut up. Because we open our mouth and we get our grade immediately. We're like, wow. Correct? What was the George Bernard Shaw saying? I'd rather be quiet and let the world think I'm a fool than open my mouth and remove all doubt. So generally in front of the spiritual master, better to keep quiet. I mean, not that we don't express, but as soon as we express, they get an understanding of where we're at. And that's nice also, right? When we express, this is why it is said that you express some realizations to the spiritual master, so he gets an idea. Okay. Because we may think we're advanced, and as soon as we express something, they know, okay. So it's done as a mutual interaction. And some attraction develops. From attraction comes a little bit more taste for hearing. And then comes the actual attachment. Shraddha, Ratir, Bhaktir, Anukramishyati. It's the same pattern of things. Bhakti means that committed relationship. Shraddha means some faith, some interest in hearing. Okay. You can give me the right answers. Shraddha, Ratir, Bhaktir, Anukramishyati. So it doesn't that as soon as we meet someone, bhakti, very rare. Very rare. Happens. Initial attraction may be there. But the commitment will come. You know, you hear from Prabhupada memories, how devotees came because they had some interest, some Swamiji was there. And they heard him speak and they felt, this is the person. They feel like this is the person I should give my life to. And they actually give their life subsequently. The feeling may come, but the actual bhakti will come later. We hear so many times, bhakti in the nectar of devotion. The first thing we hear is that bhakti is a sort of cultivation. That relationship is cultivated. Okay. Anything else? Shravan.
This disrespecting or dishonoring the spiritual master is actually in relation.
Can you speak up?
Forgetfulness of that spiritual master is an external manifestation of Chaita Guru in the heart. That's where it triggers everything out.
Forgetfulness that he is the representation of Krishna.
Krishna, Chaita Guru, that's where it, all the misunderstanding disperses, everything comes up.
Mm-hmm.
So in relation to that, the manifestation of spiritual master to help to take us back from the heart as a Chaita Guru, it manifests in different persons. The help, it may come in different persons, one of the direct spiritual master. From Vaishnavas and sadhus and anything. So there's a confusion whom to remember when we have to deal.
Instructions can come from karmis also. Right? Like the story that I had narrated about Satsarup Maharaj. It just so happened that after giving that class that night when I was reading Vaishnav Compassion, that story came. So I had distorted some of the details. The details where it said that he was with Prabhupada. Actually, he was getting off a flight and he wanted to go through immigration and customs. And because you've had that feeling, once you get off the flight, have you seen people? They all are running towards the immigration and customs because they don't want to stand in line because they've already had a long flight. And now again, standing there, if you're way back in the line, sometimes you see a person is sitting right next to you and they're far ahead in the line. You wonder, how did he get there so quickly? Sometimes people don't even go to the bathroom because they're like, first let me get through this and then if I go to the bathroom, I'll be somewhere way back in the line, different ways. So he got through the plane and he was elbowing someone. So one elderly lady asked him, is it taught in your religion to be impolite? That's how she asked him. And then he stopped in his tracks. So Krishna can teach from anywhere. But it is described that we can get lessons from anywhere. This devotee, that devotee, the senior devotee. Sometimes we get lessons from the newcomers. Have you had that experience? Every time. Newcomers give us the best lessons. Because their enthusiasm is so amazing, you wonder, what happened to mine? Where did I lose that? Or they're very sincere and they say, hey, Prabhuji, Mataji, like that. I was like, when was the last time I was like that? You know, really humble. It may be new, it may be fledgling, but they give us so many lessons. But it's described that we see all of those teachers as the representation of or extensions of our main guru, with whom we have the strongest relationship. Generally, it's the Diksha Guru or one Siksha Guru from whom everything comes. So they're all reinforcing what we're hearing from our Diksha Guru. Or particularly Siksha Guru. So that's the relationship we keep in mind. Now, the Vaishnava relationships is a very tricky thing. Generally, we have a tendency to fit everyone in, or fit only one in that no one else has place, and both are not okay. You understand? Fit everyone in means we don't have committed fidelity to a particular relationship. But that's also tricky. It's not healthy. Everyone has place in the heart, but there is a relationship from which we are fed the most. And if you keep only one and no one else in the heart, that is also a problem. I will not hear from anyone except my particular guru. If I hear from anyone, my mind gets disturbed. No, it's already disturbed. That's the problem. So when we hear from someone, we say, ah, that's very nice. That's how I'd learned from my spiritual master. And they're reinforcing that instruction. Very nice. This Vaishnava is very glorious. He's reminding me of my spiritual master. So there's room for everyone. And there is one relation. Just as if we have many uncles for one father. That one relationship that nourishes all other relationships.
Question, Prabhuji. In the Guru Puja, we sing Janme Janme Prabhuji. So the life after life, the help which is given to us to overcome the ignorance and go back to Krishna, is it the Chaita Guru's help or the same Diksha Guru's?
I've heard different answers for it, so I don't think I have a conclusive answer. We heard yesterday Chandamouli Maharaj saying, "Is the Guru comes back." So then, does the Guru, Diksha Guru, takes the formal responsibility to deliver a person? However, the person is delivered. Their responsibility is the person should be delivered. And if the person is not, then they will manifest again. He may not be in the same body per se, but they will manifest again. Now, how the technology works, I don't think I have full clarity on it. It's very difficult to understand. But the fact that they say Janme Janme Prabhu Shai, that means there is relationship, life after life, however it manifests. Sometimes it's awakened by someone else. Usually when I hear this, the example that comes to me, like first, I'm sure there are other examples, was when Yamunacharya, he was a young boy, he had defeated a big scholar and he became a king. And once he became a king, he totally forgot his devotional service. He became like a super sense gratifying king. And his grandfather, Nathamuni, who was the head of the Sri Vaishnavas at that time, wanted to bring his grandson back. So he sent one disciple to please awaken him back to Krishna consciousness. That's the first thing that comes to mind. I'm sure there are many such examples. Life after life. Well, in Bhagavad Gita, of course, it's Krishna speaking. But we may understand in a different way. Bahuni me vititani janmani tavacha Arjuna. But you and I have many lives together. I remember all of them, but you do not. Of course, Krishna remembers everything, past, present, future. But this principle is that the spiritual master's commitment does not go vain. That's the point. Our commitment goes vain. We can appreciate it that way. Till I can understand the technology of how exactly does it have the same person as a different person. To me, I thought it's the same person. You have anyone else to add on this one? Because it's a complicated topic and I don't... Too big. It can take a whole weekend seminar. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Please reserve that for the real sannyasis and the glorious persons. That ki jai.
No pain, no gain. How was the run yesterday? That was good? Cool.
Oh, that sounds ominous. Usually, I'm the one who says to people, can I see you?